Hi, I'm Hillary Ranger, the president of Christian Leaders Institute. And with me is Dr. Roy Clauser, our resident philosopher here, and you are at the beginning of the Introduction to Philosophy. Now, this class is an intense class. We get top-notch reviews about this class, but make no mistake about it, you are going to dive deep into this introduction, and it will prepare you for other classes here at Christian Leaders Institute. So with me is Dr. Roy Clauser, and what we're going to do with these interview segments throughout this class is sort of talk about things that you're actually going to dive deep into, and even some of the things you're going to read may not totally connect with even what our interview is, and that's okay, because philosophy is about a journey into asking the big questions, the important questions that guide all of life. So, Dr. Clauser, I'm glad that you're here at Christian Leaders Institute and that you've done classes like Christian Philosophy, which some of you may want to take after you take this Introduction to Philosophy. So, to get started, let's just give you a little bio background. So, quickly go over you. How did you become interested in philosophy? What did you do to pursue your philosophic career? I know as the taping of this, you're 81 years old, so that's a good age to talk about philosophy because essentially you've probably seen much of it all over the years. So tell us a little bit about your background and why you got into philosophy.
I got interested in it when I was still a teenager. I got a little paperback book of Plato's Dialogues.
Okay.
And I read that, and there was a lot I didn't understand, but it did dawn on me that what he was asking was, how can we be sure of anything?
Okay.
What is it we can really know?
Yes.
And that kind of thing. And I immediately applied that to my faith. How do I know Christianity is right? I mean, I believe
right.
it. I do. It looks true to me, but how do I know?
Right.
So I pursued that a bit, and then I made a friend who was somewhat older than I. He was in college when I was still in high school.
Okay.
And he encouraged me to think about that stuff. He was a Christian, too.
Okay.
And then some years later, he told me that he was going to go to Reformed Episcopal Seminary in Philadelphia. I had never heard of that.
Right.
And he said, why don't we go together?
Nice.
And, yeah, at the time I didn't think it was a good idea, but I did, and I never regretted it. It gave me a background. I had already started college and dropped out.
Okay.
And I went to the seminary for 3 years. I had 3 years of Greek, 3 years of Hebrew, 3 years of theology, and I was still looking for that answer, how do we know? It moved me in the right direction, but it didn't get me to the answer.
Okay.
And when I finished that, I went back and, when I completed the work at the seminary, went back and finished college as a philosophy major.
Okay.
Still looking. Right. And but during my senior year of that seminary, Herman Dooyeweerd came to Philadelphia and gave 5 lectures.
Okay.
And I heard them, and I was fascinated. Because here's the guy who's saying, there is such a thing as a Christian philosophy. And if you have that, you have a Christian take on all the sciences. And it sounded fantastic. And almost no one in the history of Christian thought ever thought there was a distinctly Christian
philosophy. I mean, they thought just there was philosophy neutral.
Yeah. Theology, yes, there's a Christian theology, but not a philosophy. One thinker put it this way, there's no more Christian philosophy than there is a Christian mathematics or a Christian biology.
Okay.
Well, on Dooyeweerd's view, there is a Christian approach to biology and mathematics. And they're very beneficial. Anyway, I got interested. So I wanted to get a degree to teach. I had to get a PhD.
Right.
So I applied to Harvard in the University in the History and Philosophy of Religion and was accepted. And I did 1 year there.
Okay.
As a starving student.
Yeah,
okay,
of course. Okay, so you went from there. And
yeah,
then.
And then I transferred to the University of Pennsylvania.
Okay. Which, by the way, is a Ivy League, very powerful school in philosophy.
Yeah,
so you
had a splendid department at the time.
Yes, yeah.
And but the main trouble was Harvard wouldn't accept government loans and pay.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so you went there.
Yeah, and I finished the PhD work there and proposed to do my dissertation on Dooyeweerd.
Oh, okay.
So The chairman said to me, we're going to approve this on two conditions.
Okay.
One is that you go there and work on it with him.
That's the Netherlands. That's where Joey Weird was at.
Yeah,
the Free University. Yep.
And they gave me a fellowship to help make that happen. And the second is that when you get done there, Joey Weird writes me a letter and says you understood him correctly.
Okay.
Because nobody here is going to read all that stuff and examine you and whether you got him right.
Right.
We're going to examine you and whether you think he is right.
Okay.
So that's what I did. I wrote a dissertation on him and defended that, and then later turned the dissertation into a book. That's what most PhD candidates
do. And that book is featured, the text and everything, in the Christian philosophy class here at Christian Leaders Institute that you can take after you complete this class.
Yes. The Myth of Religious Neutrality is the title of the book. It argues that there's no such thing as a religiously neutral theory.
Okay.
All theories assume some divinity belief or other that drives them.
It could be an idol, or it could be the
God. Of course, it can be false divinity belief.
Yes.
Yes, right. Yeah.
Okay, so then you've been teaching, and you, through your whole career, you got your PhD and some other stops along the way. So where have you been teaching philosophy over these years?
Oh, okay, I started, my first full-time job was at LaSalle.
Okay.
In Philadelphia. It was then LaSalle College. It's now LaSalle University.
Okay.
And I was the first non-Catholic ever hired in the philosophy department.
Very good.
This was 1966.
Okay.
And I was there for a couple of years, and then I learned that the state colleges in New Jersey were all being turned from teachers' colleges into liberal arts colleges.
Oh, okay.
And so the one in Trenton had no philosophy department.
Right.
So I applied to Trenton State College and was the first person hired in the new philosophy department. This is before I got my degree.
Yeah, okay.
I hadn't finished it. And in fact, there was a job freeze. Jobs are very scarce.
Right.
And the five people that they hired to start the department had degrees at Columbia, Penn, Harvard.
Right.
And Pittsburgh, which is one of the top places for philosophy of science in the country.
Right.
They had all these really great schools represented, and all of us went there and said, well, we're just here till we get published, and then we're going to get out.
Right.
And nobody ever got out. There were no, we all
no
did.
No defectors.
That's
you
right.
You stayed there overall. But
everybody published, but there was nowhere to go. There were no jobs.
Okay, so there you go. So now, we are launching into this philosophy class, and so what we're going to be doing is having interviews, and I'm going to be interviewing our esteemed professor here on some of these subjects. Now, you're going to go in depth in reading in this class and some other presentations. And again, this class is a great introduction to you in a lot of philosophic subjects. So we're going to cover some of them together. Now, here's my first question. It's sort of a launch into this. So what is philosophy?
Okay. That itself has been philosophically controversial.
Okay, I would imagine.
You would imagine, yes. But I think that it's fair to say that the majority of people that have entered that field agree with the description I'm about to give. It's hard thinking directed at the totality of our life and experience, the totality of reality. There are two main kinds of theories in philosophy, a general theory of reality and a general theory of knowledge.
Okay.
Okay. Theory of reality has a couple of names. Its proper name is ontology, probably a word you never heard.
Okay.
It has a nickname, metaphysics.
Okay.
It got that nickname because Aristotle wrote a book on physics, and then he wrote a book on the theory of reality, and nobody knew what to call it. So they called it the book that comes after the physics. That's what metaphysics means.
Oh, okay.
And it became the nickname for anything that he brought up in that book.
Okay.
And a general theory of reality means that we're not doing what the sciences do. The sciences pick a specific side of the reality that we experience and investigate it. There's a how much to our experience. Things have quantity, and we represent that by number, and we develop mathematics. Things exhibit spatial characteristics. They have location, size, dimension, shape.
Right.
And we have a science of space, geometry.
Mm-hmm.
We have physics, and we have biology, and psychology, and logic, and we have linguistics, and sociology, economics, and so on.
Right.
Many other ethics. And people take all these different sides, and they investigate them. But philosophy asks, what's the whole? What hangs them all together? What's their connectedness? So that it's a way of going at everything. And that scares some people. They say, oh my God, I have a terrible time just dealing with one at a time.
Right.
But for other people, it gets them excited. Yes, how do we get at the whole? How do we get the reality of which these are all aspects?
Okay.
And, of course, non-Christian approach to this has often been to pick one of those and make it the cause of all the rest.
Oh, okay. So give an example of that.
Yeah. If we think of all these different fields of investigation as beads on a necklace, philosophy wants to know what is the string. So if you're a materialist, you pick the physical one,
okay,
the one that physics studies, and you claim that causes all the rest, or the rest are illusory, and there's only the
physical. What's an example of a materialist today?
People?
No, a philosophy that would be materialism today.
Sure.
That somebody might have heard of.
There are theorists who claim that things are exclusively physical. They have only physical properties and are governed by only physical laws. Most materialists say it's the things that are purely physical that generate anything that's not.
So a bead would be a discipline, but yeah, underneath the bead would be everything is matter.
That's right. Everything is basically physical. So physics is the ultimate science.
Okay.
But then most of them will admit there's a problem explaining human consciousness.
Okay.
Consciousness doesn't seem to be physical. One theorist put it this way: our problem is, how does our technicolor experience arise out of soggy gray matter?
Right. The brain.
So, yeah. So that's one example of taking one of the beads and making it the string that links,
okay,
that creates everything else. And of course, what we want to say as Christians is there's none of those beads that hangs them all together. God does. It's the power of God that hangs
Colossians,
them all together.
Colossians, the book of Colossians.
That's right,
right,
Colossians 1. In Jesus Christ, all things hang together, the Greek says.
Okay.
And one very well-known philosopher, American philosopher, Wilfred Sellers, once said, philosophy is about how all things, in the widest sense of things, hang together, in the widest sense of hang together. It's perfect. Definition.
So that would be, is that sort of ours, should be our working definition?
Oh, I'd like, oh, yes.
How all things.
Yes.
In the widest sense of all things.
Of things.
Right.
Not just objects.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Properties,
yeah,
and laws.
Right, right,
and
right, right.
So on, yes. Hang together. And the Colossians 1 hand says what that is.
It's Christ.
Yes, that's right.
So as you begin the philosophy class, here's a working definition. And it's Colossians 1 in Christ.
All things hang together.
Hang together. Okay, so I have one more thing to add on that. So back to Dr. Herman Dooyeweerd in your study. Now, he talked in a lot of ways about, like, you know, naive, just you observe with your eyes, you experience. And then he also talks about the science of studying that.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's just introduce that thinking a little bit here,
sure,
so that as we go through these courses, we can sort of get two hooks.
Yeah.
So in one sense, we're all philosophers.
Yeah.
We all have our naive experience.
Yes.
What is naive experience?
Well, he means there that prior to making theories, or aside, okay, from trying to make theories about things, we just experience them.
Okay.
So I see the tabletop and the laptop and so on.
Right.
And we take these in as whole objects,
okay,
that have all kinds of, seem to have all kinds of properties.
Right.
So the table has spatial shape and size.
Yeah.
It has physical solidity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It has sensory color.
Yeah.
And it's logically distinct from the,
yeah, yeah,
the laptop. But in our non-theoretical experience,
it's,
we don't think about that.
Right.
That.
We don't think our hands there.
It has logical properties and sensory properties.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We're not doing that. So I sometimes introduce this to the class by saying, look around the room, look at all the things that are here, and tell me, if you can, what kinds of properties they seem to exhibit.
Right.
What kinds of properties? And the properties are law-ordered. It can be,
right,
kinds of laws.
Right.
Properties and laws. And so they usually come up with, well, things are physical, right?
That's right.
One. Things have mathematical properties. That's right.
Yeah.
Spatial properties, right? They,
mm-hmm.
they often they think they don't have logical properties because a lot of logic books speak as though only arguments and statements
right,
have logical
right.
properties. They're consistent.
Well, what's those tables' logical property?
It being conceivable, being logically distinguishable from other things.
Oh, and then,
able to be conceived.
And having a purpose.
And able to be conceived logically.
Yeah.
So, in that sense, all things have a passive property, we call it.
Oh,
logic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so wait a minute. So, there is active properties,
yeah.
passive properties.
Right.
So there's, so in a sense, we look at things in a non-scientific, naive way. But if we look deeper at them, there are even passive properties that are inside of them, like the table with
right.
the
it
speed.
Has the potentiality. It has the potentiality to be logically distinguished, or we couldn't do it.
Right.
We can't. It's flat out contradictory to say I can logically distinguish this table, and it doesn't have the property of being distinguishable.
That's right, right.
Yeah. So what happens, then Dewey says, is as people distinguish these different kinds of properties and laws, they make that a field of study.
Oh,
so
okay.
Physics becomes a distinct study from biology, from psychology, from logic, from sociology, economics, ethics, and so on. They're all distinct areas. We in the English-speaking world, we tend to use science only to mean what we call the hard sciences.
Right.
The physics and biology and so on, stuff that you do experiments with in a lab. But in German, the word for science is Wissenschaft. It's a branch of knowledge. So that in that terminology, sociology and ethics and aesthetics are also sciences.
Mm-hmm.
They're areas of study. And so people go into those areas and they make theories
right.
to try to get explanations. And then, of course, the explanation of how they all hang together in reality is a theory of knowledge. How they all relate in knowledge is a theory of knowledge. So we have a theory of reality and theory of knowledge. Ontology and epistemology. Epistemology is the name for the theory of reality. They're the two backbones
mm-hmm.
of philosophy. When we get specific courses like philosophy of, we can have philosophy of mathematics, philosophy of biology, philosophy
right.
of science, philosophy of ethics, and so on, then what we're doing is bringing a general theory of reality and knowledge to bear on a specific science and saying,
mm-hmm.
here are the consequences for that science from the philosophical point of view.
So what you're going to get in this class is you're going to dive in to these kinds of questions, these kinds of inquiry, asking not only what is there, but why is something here? How does your naive or your just experience of the world connect to a specific theory of your experience of the world? So,
yeah.
And that's what philosophy does.
Yeah, the sciences and philosophy both do that. They enrich our naive, our pre-theoretical experience.
Right.
So I see the sun rise and set.
Right.
And everybody does, and everybody
right.
has always.
Yes.
But now I know about the earth turning, and I add that to my experience.
Right, right.
Yeah, it doesn't detract, it adds to.
So welcome to the philosophy class. We're going to get engaged in some areas of study you probably really never thought of before if you haven't studied philosophy. And if you have studied philosophy, you're also going to get introduced to a Christian philosophy approach where a matrix of Christ who holds everything together is honored and glorified so that we glorify and honor the God who made us. So welcome to the Introduction to Philosophy class.